Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, Holly and I have a very exciting show and new series we're beginning. And we are beginning a series on the Royal Society and sort of the history and background of everything that leads up to the Royal Society's beginnings. And so we have a lot to cover. First off, I want to say thank you to several Patreon people, Jesse, Michael, and Body Snatcher, a number of other people who sent donations, etc. Jeffrey sent a donation. We have Lewis and Jesus sent a donation, some other people. Thank you so much for that. First off, I was wanting to start with a little clip here, so I'm going to start with that. Holly, do you want to say hello?
Hi, everyone.
And let's see. So I'm going to start off with this little clip here.
I am a cop, and you will respect my authority.
Yeah, right. You better get back to school, little boy.
Anyway, that's it. So I just wanted to start in with that because this series, you know, we...
Don't show too much or you get hit with a cop.
I've already turned it off. And because this series, we obviously named it Respect My Societa, and it's kind of based on the same mentality as Eric Cartman there. Wow, we already have two thumbs down, and we haven't even started the show, obviously. The bad people are out already. Please thumb up the episode for us tonight. Thanks, everyone, for joining. So Holly and I have a quite extensive amount to go into, so I'm going to pass it over to Holly to start. So do you want to take over there, Holly?
Okay, so we're starting a new series about the history of the Royal Society. It's an English scientific society. If you look up their website, they're very active and very influential even to this day. And they have a very fascinating history going back to the very beginnings of scientism in England and the break from the Catholic Church and Protestantism and the Enlightenment era, and even going back to the Renaissance. So what we're going to do tonight is talk about the history of the of Europe and England and the formation of the Royal Society. So kind of giving everyone some context as to why the Royal Society is so influential and so important to this day. So as we talked about in our last episode about the letter X, so very influential people who are scientists are often put into positions within the Royal Society, and they're made fellows of the Royal Society. So you'll see an acronym FRS next to people's names. And yes, we mentioned that Elon Musk is the 2018 inductee into the Royal Society. So what really starts off the history of the Royal Society is the Henry VIII story. So a lot of people know about Henry VIII from the six wives of Henry VIII, but people don't really understand that there's a lot going on between the Reformation. Martin Luther came into a strong power within Europe during that time, and the Protestant Reformation, and Henry VIII breaking from the Catholic Church. And then from there, his daughters, Mary, also known as Bloody Mary, and then the Queen Elizabeth of England. And then during this time as well, we have the formation of the United States. So 1509 to 1547 is when Henry VIII was ruling in England. He was a Stuart. He married his brother's wife, Catherine of Aragon, and Catherine of Aragon was was from Spain, and her mother and father were Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain, who put forward the Columbus and the Columbian Exposition. So she was very popular with the people of England, and it was common practice to marry your brother's wife if you deceased. So Henry VIII married Catherine of Aragon after his older brother Arthur passed away. So, and they had the daughter, Mary. So she later became Mary, Queen of Scots. And then after a few years of King Henry VIII's rule, along with Catherine of Aragon in 1517, Martin Luther published his 95 Theses in Germany, criticizing the Catholic Church for abuses and the concept of indulgences, which he said it was heretical for people to be able to purchase their way out of sins. So he was very critical of the Catholic Church. And so that was gaining popularity within Europe, and it started the Lutheranism and Protestantism, and then later as we connect into Puritanism. So go ahead.
Well, we should also mention that Martin Luther was a murderer, and so, you know, the idea to him of paying for his indulgences to have his sins removed for his own forgiveness was probably the cause of that. Go ahead.
Okay, so let me start in. So by 1529, Henry VIII cut ties to Rome. He wanted a divorce from Catherine of Aragon. He said the marriage was null and void because she did not give him his firstborn male heir. He had a daughter with her, but he claimed that because he didn't have the male heir with her, that the marriage was not successful. So he was looking for a legitimate male heir. He had a bastard child with another woman, but he wanted a male heir with a queen. So he wanted a divorce. Well, he asked for an annulment originally, and the Pope, who was for many years a prisoner under the Holy Roman Emperor, he refused to give the annulment. And so therefore he decided to break from the papal rule and start his own Church of England. And so in 1531, Halley's Comet circles England, and the people of England were scared. They thought it was foretelling the break of the Catholic Church from England. And Catherine of Aragon still had much popularity in England. And King Henry VIII marries his lover in Boleyn. And in 1533, Elizabeth I is born. So do you want to jump in, Jan, or do you want me to keep going?
Well, I wanted to say thanks to Nathan and to Mars Pluto for your $2 donations each. Much appreciated. Please support the show. Please spread it around. Also, if you hover your mouse over the screen there, up at the top, there's an eye that shows up. That'll take you to our Patreon page to support the show and our work. So we really appreciate any support we can get from all of you. Of course, Holly is in Maine. I'm still in California. Hopefully that'll all be changing here soon. So did we mention Halley's Comet?
Yes.
Okay.
So I like to bring up Halley's Comet because in England it was usually foretelling some sort of event. People were associating when they saw Halley's Comet in London with an event. So it appeared in 1531. And then the second time that it appears and causes a stir is right before the 1666 Great Fire and the Great Plague in London. So I wanted to mention that. So do you want to jump in or do you want me to keep going?
You can keep going from there.
Okay. So Queen Elizabeth I, the child of Anne Boleyn and Henry VIII, is born in 1533. And then by 1535, Thomas Cromwell, who is the granduncle of Oliver Cromwell, takes control of the church fortunes in England. And it's a theft from the public, and the money is poured into Henry's coffers. And then by 1547, Henry VIII dies.
Well,
so
why was it a theft from the public? You know, the lands were public lands under the Catholic Church, and the crown stole all of those lands from the Catholic Church. And then, you know, made them into private lands and then poured the money into King Henry's coffers.
Correct. So Henry VIII promotes Protestantism after his after he breaks. He still claims to follow Christianity, Catholicism, but the Anglican Church is established. And then by that time, there's all kinds of splintering within the Protestant Reformation, and Puritan gets started. And there's a few years, 1547 to 1553, that Edward IV rules, but he quickly dies of tuberculosis. So Mary, Queen of Scots, takes over in 1553. She's Mary Stuart. She's a fervent Catholic, the daughter of Catherine of Aragon, and she tries to put out the Puritans and Protestants. She burns has over 180 people tried and killed. So she is known as Bloody Mary. And then she is taken out, and Elizabeth I is put into power, her half-sister. And then she reinstitutes the Church of England and Protestantism. And then, of course, we see the very fascinating court of Elizabeth I, which puts forward the several voyages to the United States, which is the Jamestown colony. Also, John Dee comes into her court. Oliver Cromwell is in her court. And there's a lot of fighting within the court. And of course, she never marries. She's known as the Virgin Queen. And during this time, there's a Shakespeare. So there's a very interesting time in English history while Elizabeth I is ruling.
The Elizabethan period. So Queen Elizabeth's spy, Dr. John Dee, who lived from 1527 to 1609, was a big alchemist. You know, and folks, I would like to just mention... and I'm going to just interrupt for a second. Stonewall just donated $5. He says, hope you talk about recent Newton's chronology maligned. We're not going into Newton tonight. Sorry, we're focused on this. You know,
That's probably episode two.
We'd really like two or three, maybe even. It depends on how long it goes. And this is going to be a number of shows. But we'd really like to see this episode hit at least $300 or $400. We want to... cover a lot of ground in this series, so all of your help is greatly appreciated. There's 86 of you watching now. Please spread it around and promote it so we get more people in here. But Queen Elizabeth's spy was Dr. John Dee, and of course, you know, Queen Elizabeth is she takes the crown after Mary Stuart, or Bloody Mary, is killed. Of course, today we have the drink, the Bloody Mary, after either, you know, her own death or the death of those that she killed. And but she's trying to rein in Protestantism and this heresy through that had been taken over and was corrupting things. And we're going to go into more of how Protestantism and Lutheranism was a corruption. But she's trying to rein it back all in. So this is why she's going through all of that. And so John Dee is her spy, and he's an alchemist, and he influences the creation of the Rosicrucians, or the Rosicrucians influence him. It's kind of, you know, cloudy how which direction that goes there. But so 1603, Queen Elizabeth dies, and then between 1614 and 1616, three anonymous manifestos are published in Germany. Heinrich Kunrath was influenced by John Dee, and so this is like their spy network, it's believed that this guy Heinrich, he published the first manifesto, and then he creates a Christianized natural magic, which of course that would be antithetical to logos or truth, so it's anti-Christian. And Kunrath was also a Lutheran. Now, in from 1604 to 1611, when it was published, this is when the King James version of the the King James version of the Bible was published, and so this is the King James version, or a copy of it. Now, So this was the third Bible that was published in the English language, and it would remove all of the apocryphal texts, or excuse me, it doesn't technically remove them yet. It puts all of the apocryphal texts at the end of the, I don't know if anybody can see those there, but at the end of the Old Testament, it just clumps them all at the end there. And so it sort of takes things out of order. And of course, the word apocryphal means hidden. So they take the hidden texts and they hide them at the back of the Bible, and or at the back of the Old Testament. So they're out of order. And not only that, they change the order of the chapters. For instance, here's an Orthodox Bible. The Book of Daniel is the last chapter of the Orthodox Bible, and it also has the story of Susanna in it and in the proper order, which opens up the Book of Daniel. And the story of Susanna is very important because it shows that giving false testimony is punishable by death. And so, those who were giving false testimony probably wanted that removed. And so it was cut out. And then Bel the dragon, who's probably Baal, that story is removed as well from the end of the Book of Daniel, which was kind of like an Old Testament apocalypse type text. And then in 1605 was the Guy Fawkes plot, a claimed Catholic plot to murder King James the First, probably for butchering the Bible. And traditionally, and we're going to go into more of this later on, and for those who've seen the Salem research that we've done, Guy Fawkes has an effigy burned of him in England every year, which is mirrored in the Purim annual festival, and which they burn an effigy of Haman in that thing. So there is a parallel between these two things going on here. And so in the early 1600s, the Rosicrucian order is founded. And so the manifestos in Germany that I just mentioned by Heinrich, Kunrath, that influences the creation of this new organization. And so the manifestos in Germany are at the basis of it, but it's hard to say the exact year that the Rosicrucian order is founded. And then the manifestos combine early references to Kabbalism, which of course is Judaic, and then Hermeticism, which Hermes is Mercury, and that's, alchemy, etc. So this is what they call mystical Christianity, which is the antithesis to Christian logos, essentially. So you have these Rosicrucians and the spy network who are creating this sort of false Christianity that they follow. And so then this sort of plays out into all of this, stuff going on that becomes, the spy or intelligence community, essentially. And then John Dee would later influence a guy by the name of Christopher Wren, who was a key founder behind the Royal Society. And he was the first to come up with, John Dee was the first to come up with the overpopulation myth. And today the same lie is promoted while population is on a massive decline right now. So I encourage everyone out there in the listening audience to go out and start a family. There's been so much propaganda out there about against families and everything, and families are decimated now. But Dee goes on to create things like fairy tales, which help encode messages, probably for Queen Elizabeth, to guide the public in, the beliefs that they want the children to have about the kingdom, etc. And he creates ciphers, which is like, encrypted wording and messages and things like that. And another thing that's really important connected to Dee is that he creates the bards, essentially, I think, were created after John Dee. And the bards sell the image that Queen Elizabeth wanted to promote. And the bards would go into the taverns and they would collect the stories from the locals, you know, the local folklore. And then they would take them back to their homes or wherever they worked, and they would rewrite the folklore. And then they would, later on, they would go back to the taverns and they would spread the new folklore in its altered form back to the public to change the actual folklore that the public, you know, spoke and spread about. So, you know, and they would do it in a way that the public thought it was organic and it was their original, but it was not. They would just change little sections of the story that inserted the queens and the kings, for that matter, that inserted the direction that they wanted the public to go. So popular bards include Merlin the Magician was probably the first bard. You know, if that's, you know, he is considered the first bard, I should say. And then William Shakespeare was a bard, J.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, and then later people such as Terence McKenna, who bragged about being a bard. This is actually an admission, basically, that you're an agent, that you're a propagandist, which Terence McKenna admitted that he was a public relations guy. And so this is basically an admission when somebody says that they're a bard, that they're involved in this sort of thing. So D also helps to create or influence the creation of legends, such as the Arthurian legends. And he also is one of the first, Johann, oh, now I'm forgetting his name. I should probably pull this up here. So he gets into steganography. Where did I put it here? Oh, goodness. Just a second. Here it is. So Jonathan, this guy. Johannes Trimetheus. And, you know, so this guy is really who created steganography, which is a way of hiding messages inside images. And he was a lexicographer, chronologer, cryptographer. So again, you know, he's doing cryptography, encrypting messages. So this guy, Johannes Trithemius, I hope I'm saying that right, and he died in 1516. He was another encryptor. So they're sending these secret messages back and forth and trying to, you know, have all of this secret stuff going on. But, you know, and for those who want to see some of the connections to John Dee, you can also, by the way, you can go to the Logos Media website and you can, if I can find that, you can, you can go there and find the brain database up here at the top of the website here. And for those who aren't using Firefox, you can see a big blank space here behind Chrome, Internet Explorer and whatnot, and the others, Opera, you can actually see the brain database right here, but you can click on the link right here and follow it there. And by the way, please support the show. You can also just click the donate thing right there on the website. Sorry for the self-aggrandizement there. But so all of this cryptography, encryption, steganography, etc. is going on, and they're rewriting the legends and myths of the people. And they are trying to control the beliefs of the people as well as access to information, etc. So D also used So D, he was a big-time alchemist as well. And, you know, people today have as well as the scientific community have, at least what they tell us, have a very false perception of alchemy. But in the alchemical images, D used these to encode messages in the images of operations, formulas, all of these kinds of things. And all of this would later go on to influence the creation of British MI6, the infamous spy agency. So his work influences, and then going out further, influences British spy masters like Aleister Crowley, as well as the creation of humanism. You want to jump in there?
So just wanted to mention real quick, I think, you know, this might not be either here nor there, but there's some interesting photographs and videos. I haven't really been able to substantiate or do too much research on this, but it appears that Queen Elizabeth II, when she was a princess, was actually initiated into a Druid order as a bard in 1946. If you look up some photographs of Queen Elizabeth II, it appears that she had been initiated herself as a bard. They called it the Sacred Circle of Bards in 1946. So some people claim that this order in England still exists. And in fact, the second Queen of England is Queen Elizabeth has been made a bard. She has been since she was initiated in 1946. So just an interesting side note there. So a lot of people think about England. So we've spent a lot of time talking about the English Renaissance and the history of the Protestant Reformation in England and how it affected the royal families and religion in England. But we also need to understand that at the same time, simultaneously in Europe, there's also the story of Galileo. So in 1616, Galileo Galilei, who's from Italy, was accused of heresy by the popes of the Vatican. And he was charged with heresy for promoting ideas similar to Protestantism. So he was promoting heliocentrism that he got from Copernicus. He was also...
You're cutting out there. You want to repeat what you just said?
Was causing the tides.
You're cutting out. Repeat what you just said.
Okay, so Galileo was charged with heresy in 1616, and he was accused of promoting the heliocentric model proposed by Copernicus. He was also accused of promoting heliocentrism with the moon. So he proposed that the moon was actually the cause of the sea tides and a heretic.
Okay, we just totally lost you.
And that same year.
We just totally lost you again. I don't know if you have anything running, pause it because your bandwidth is cutting out. You lost the last sentence. Repeat the last sentence, please.
Just mentioning heliocentrism and he proposed that the moon was the cause for the tides in the ocean. And in 1616, at the same time, Sir Walter Raleigh, under the authority of Queen Elizabeth I, does an expedition to Guyana to find El Dorado. He was also putting forward creating the Jamestown colony under Queen Elizabeth I. And during this time, there was a big promotion of scientism and cosmology, the idea that the planets were really ruling a lot of the world and not so much God himself. So many people were thought of as heretics because they were promoting this idea of the planets. And people were proposing from the Vatican, there's Acts 1:11, quote, "Ye men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing up into heaven?" So it was thought of as heretics to be promoting this astrology and astronomy the way that these spies were and the way that Galileo was and modern scientists. And then by 1625...
And Galileo was thought to have been from Galilee as well. So they cite Galilee and Galileo's looking at, you know, the guy looking at the stars. So just kind of in-your-face irony there.
That's a good point, yes. So after Queen Elizabeth dies... King James I takes power. Then when he dies, King Charles I takes over. And then by 1633, Galileo is put on trial for calling Pope a simpleton. So if you want to jump in, Jan, I think you have some more information about that.
Sure. So let's see. So, okay, so 1625, King James dies, and King Charles I takes the throne. And what's interesting is, okay, so let's see, just looking at the notes here. Galileo's on trial again, like you just mentioned. You cut out a bit again, so your signal's pretty bad tonight, unfortunately. But for calling the Pope a simpleton, and he pretends he's not accusing him of such, and he's put it on house arrest for 9 years until 1642. And then, interestingly, right about the same time, all of this stuff is happening in the New World with the Puritans. Of course, Oliver Cromwell was a Puritan, and all of this stuff is going on. So in 1636 to 1638, you have the antinomian controversy happening. And so, you know, these basically antinomian means against the law or anti-law. So you had those who believed in natural law and logos, and then you had those who believed in anti-law or antinomianism. And so who was it? John Cotton and Anne Hutchinson and some others, they start promoting this idea of the of antinomianism as well as divine grace, etc. And divine grace was essentially that, you know, all of the chosen people were already chosen and who were going to go to heaven, and it didn't matter your acts and what you were doing. It was all predestination. So it didn't matter your acts or what you did. It mattered, you know, you were a chosen person at birth. And so all of this antinomian stuff is directly antithetical to Christianity and to logos and to truth, at, you know, logos as truth, etc., and reason, logic, the word, etc. So the idea of the order, exemplified by the network of astronomers and mathematicians, etc., and this is going into John Dee, but, you know, so they're basically, they start promoting men such as Johannes Kepler, George Joachim Rheticus, John Dee, you know, and then this all gives rise to what was known as the Invisible College. Now, there was I'm just checking my notes here. So there were two precursor groups to the Royal Society. And please, everyone, please give your support. Hit the Patreon button up there, and we can use all your support. Holly and I have been doing a lot of research for all of this and travel and books and everything. I bought a whole bunch more books yesterday or day before yesterday for all of this. So all the support we can get, we really appreciate.
I told him to stop, but he won't stop.
You told me to stop what?
Buying books. I was like, you had like a list of like 12 other books. I'm like, all right, how about this one and this one? And let's hold off and try to finish the other ones first, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well,
there'll be more.
Well, you know, we're trying to flesh out. I'm trying to get the grammar that we need to flesh all of this out as thoroughly as possible and give people a real picture of this, because we don't want to have errors in it and give you folks misinformation on it. So, you know, and if those of you in the audience, if you do find errors, of course, you can submit them to us, you know, as long as you have the citations. Don't just say, you're wrong because, full stop. You know, that's a lot of the arguments that we get. So it becomes kind of silly. But, yeah, somebody says John Dee is Agent 007. Yeah, I mean, essentially, John Dee was the first British spy, you know, so, and that's from Robert in the chat there. But he was basically the first big British spy, and he laid down the groundwork for what became, you know, British MI6 and the whole foundation of them controlling and manipulating the public. And of course, British MI6 works directly with the CIA and the two, probably with Canadian Intelligence Service and Australian Intelligence Service, all ran Project MKUltra together against our own people. They weren't running it, you know, in foreign countries and whatnot. It was a direct violation of the CIA's charter, which, you know, that's just a smokescreen anyway to make people think they don't do anything against Americans. But most of what the CIA does is against the American people. So let's see. So these two precursor groups are of the Royal Society. In 1645, the Gresham College Group is founded by Robert Hooke, Robert Boyle, Christopher Wren. And Christopher Wren and these guys show up, you know, and 20 years down the road in the Great Plague of London, or the Great Fire of London, and the Plague of London, etc., as well as John Wilkins, Sir Robert Maury, and also influences the foundation of the Royal Society. And then Robert Boyle founds another group called the Invisible College, which is a Rosicrucian group, and that's another direct precursor to the Royal Society. So you have all of this occult, spy, Rosicrucian, Satanist, occultist stuff going to create the foundation of modern science. And I should say on a side note, the Invisible College, there was an Invisible College started, I don't know, it was five, six, seven years ago, maybe by Professor Carl Ruck at Boston University. And he was actually the first interview I ever did, and he pulled, you know, dozens of us into this Invisible College. And then I start exposing Gordon Wasson and all these guys, all of these so-called academics in there are putting me down. Not one of them would deal with the citations. And I ended up exposing him in my 2014 article in Theugen's What's in a Name. But so it's interesting because you can see Carl Ruck uses this Invisible College, which is a Rosicrucian thing, which was used to found the Royal Society. And so then you can begin to string along. And back then, I was totally ignorant of where this Invisible College thing came from. And I should go through and name everybody in there as well. Maybe another time I will. But, you know, I still have the email saved of everybody who was in that. I'm sure they went, Holly's shaking her head. But so the Gresham College Group is formed to create experimental scientism. And the second group in 1660 contained 12 members and concerned the founding of the Royal Societa. And so in 1647, a big conspiracy builds by the Puritans and Oliver Cromwell to kill King Charles I and to legalize Judaism. And so here I'm going to show one of the primary letters on the screen. This is a pretty famous letter by Ebenezer Pratt to Oliver Cromwell, dated the 12th of July, 1647. "Will grant financial aid as soon as Charles is removed and Jews admitted. Assassination too dangerous. Charles will be given the opportunity to escape. His recapture will make trial and execution possible. Support to be liberal, but useless to discuss terms until trial commences." So that's, you know, this whole scheme behind the background and all going. And let's see, Rugi says he donated $20 recently for future shows on scientism. So thanks. This goes toward that. And please, everyone, we need to raise as much as we can on this show. Please donate. Please hit the Patreon button. Please go to Holly's Patreon, mine, all of that. We need all the support we can get. Our PayPal thing up on the Gnostic Media, or excuse me, Logos Media Now website. We can all use your support on that. So, do you want to take over the next one here?
I'd like to. I'm nervous that my internet connection isn't that good right now, but I can try, and then if I just continue to cut off.
Do you have the video paused? Do you have the video paused on your side? Okay.
Yeah, I'll do that. So I just wanted to mention, like, if people want to people want a quick overview of basically what the antinomian controversy was. So the antinomian means like anti-law. And so the main, basically the crux of the antinomian controversy was, it's the covenant of works versus the covenant of grace. So Martin Luther really promoted the idea of grace, the covenant of grace, where you're basically just chosen by God, and you have to believe that you have been granted with grace and you'll be forgiven, versus the covenant of works, which the covenant of works promoted by the Catholic Church was that you needed to do good in your life and you need to have something to show for it. So the covenant of grace just said, you know, you're either accepted or you're not. This is also promoted by Calvin, etc. And people who accepted the covenant of works, they called them legalists or legalism. So there's a lot of different terms thrown around, and you know, I'm guessing we'll probably do a whole show on antinomianism and Anne Hutchinson, because it's just such a fascinating topic. But that was going on, the Anne Hutchinson story, who eventually found this.
All right, Holly's cutting out there again, unfortunately.
New World time. So yeah, basically, you're, from there,
you are cutting out again pretty badly. I don't know what to do about that. We're going to have to get Holly's internet fixed or something going on there. So sorry about that. So yeah, you know, and we just talked about the antinomian controversy, and all of that is discussed in this book by David Hall, and lots of spin in this book. You know, they're all playing up the official story. Of course, Hall writes a couple of books on the Salem incident, and then but in, you know, in 1644. The Puritans and Oliver Cromwell had banned Christmas celebrations in England. And then in 1649, they succeeded in committing regicide against King Charles, who is a Stuart and the rightful king. But he's murdered by the Puritans and Oliver Cromwell and their ilk, and this whole conspiracy to get him out of power because he wasn't going along with their Rosicrucian, antinomian, Puritan, Protestant plot, essentially. So they needed to get rid of him. So they decapitate him. And then in 1650, you know, so all of this stuff, once King Charles is out of the way, that's when they can really dig in and start in with a lot of this stuff. And so in 1650, the Oxford Philosophical Club is founded by Sir Christopher Wren and Robert Boyle and Robert Hooke and John Wilkins. So again, the same four people. And then in 1660, when as King Charles II is taking over, the Royal Society is founded, and it met at Gresham College until the Great Fire of, ironically, 1666, and that's ironically the same year that the Jewish propagandist Sabbatai Zevi declares himself the Messiah. So, you know, and of course it's based on the 666 there. Do you want to try again, Holly?
I just want to say thanks to Pontegonal Construction and Nathan and Earl. And Nathan, again, you had a couple of super chats in there.
Oh, I missed them. I'm so sorry. Oh, wow. Yeah. Holy. Yeah, I'm reading the notes and I don't have. Yeah, so thanks, Early. Thank you, Nathan. I think Nathan donated twice now.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, Polygonal Construction, all of you. Thank you so much. We need all the support we can get for this. I've been spending way too much on books and everything.
Hey, so by the way, your internet is kind of cutting out too, so it's not just me, so...
Goodness. Well,
so help us with our internet connection this evening. Just mentioning, you mentioned 1666. We've talked about this in a couple of other episodes, but that was also the year of the Great Fire in England, which purged a lot of London, and they could rebuild London again from the ashes and rebuild Parliament and everything else from there. And also the Great Plague, the Mystery Plague of 1665. 1666 also hit London during that time, and also Halley's Comet went by during that time, so people were having a really hard time in London, and it's a very fascinating side topic there as well. Just as the Royal Society, we talked about Robert Hooke published a book, Micrographia, that described the plague flea at the same time, so my suspicion is that members of the Royal Society actually did know how this plague was being spread during that time. There's also something called the sweating sickness, which is a big mystery. We still don't really know what caused the sweating sickness in England. That was another plague. So that's another topic that we've been examining as of late.
And you want to continue on with some of these points here? We're at, 1666 was a big year for the Satanists. And so, Anyway, let's see. 16, you know, and we kind of jumped ahead a little bit there. But so in 1660, the corrupt and compromised King Charles the First. Oh, let's see, what year does he come into power? Now I forget what year he comes to power, but he is loyal to the Puritan agenda, and so he's the one who gives them the Royal Society Charter, and then, you know, the Royal Society Charter and all of this is based on this thing from Ben Jonson in England, who referenced the idea relating to, relating it and meaning to Francis Bacon's House of Solomon. And so, you know, all of these things are anti-logos. It wasn't just about, you know, allowing people to have free conversation. What it was is, you know, you have truth on one side and then occult manipulation, lies, deception, Satanism on the other side. So what they're doing is they're undermining and breaking apart the church through Protestantism. The New Testament clearly says that the church is supposed to be one. So by them breaking and severing the church and Protestantism, the Protestant Reformation, Lutheranism, Calvinism et al., these are severing the church, which is directly against what the Bible says. So when you get in there and you realize this stuff and you realize and understand what logos is, it's truth, reason, logic, etc., that these were all antithetical to that. So they're undermining the whole thing so that they can sell this big agenda. You know, so all of this, you know, goes through to just undermine the understanding of logos, and it's so that they can get these antinomian, anti-Christian. In fact, most of them, many of these ideas were, in fact, Jewish ideas, and they were not Christian ideas. So that needs to be made clear in that as well. So, you know, it's hard, you know, a lot of these concepts are hard to understand, but you have to go, you know, we've spent a lot of time and way too many books reading all of this stuff to try to, you know, to pull all of this out.
So I think it's interesting to note, someone who gave one of the donations earlier said that they want us to do a show on Scientism. And that this is really the Royal Society is the crux or the foundation of Scientism. And it's spread all across Europe. And so we're laying the groundwork for how the Royal Society came about. And it was through splintering the church, like we said, and undermining the power of the king. I mean, in fact, you know, Cromwell and the Puritans took over Parliament. They outlawed the celebration of Christmas. They got rid of alms to the poor. They instituted this very strict Puritan system of religion. And then from there, at the same time, they were promoting Scientism, the heliocentric model, human experimentation, so, you know, surgery, and eventually inoculations. So the Royal Society, founded through these college institutions, will eventually create the scientific method and peer review, and then some of the big names of enlightenment who just so happen to also be alchemists. So that's the point I want to make as well, is that we, in modern science, we separate ourselves from alchemy. But once you look at the very foundation of science, it's based on magic and sorcery and alchemy. And we like to think that they're two separate ideas, but if you look at the works of Newton, et cetera, they were one and the same.
Right. So, you know, Scientism is basically what they did is they're undermining Christianity and they're using the Royal Society to create a new science or a new religion called Scientism. And they want people to not follow logos and truth and honor and reason and logic. They want people to follow the scientism that the Royal Society has control over. And Holly and I did a show on Saturday laying out some of the key things that they did behind that. But, you know, so scientism, alchemy, all of these things, they through the Royal Society, they get a stranglehold on the information. Thank you, Brian, and thank you, Carl, for your donations just now. Much appreciated. Now, how did they get a stranglehold on it? It was by And Alcamia BlackRock. That's interesting. I haven't checked that, but that's a really interesting point. But how would they
get... A lot of them were Saturn worshippers too, so it's interesting you mentioned
right.
BlackRock. So just side
right.
note. Sorry.
And BlackRock ties, you know, Satanist, Saturn worship, the Kaaba stone, Burning Man, etc. But going back, how did they get a hold of the dialogue? It wasn't As somebody mentioned in the chat earlier, and I think we have some occultists in there trying to mislead people in the chat with, you know, with some false information who are clearly promoting the antinomian occultist perspective in there. But how they did this, it wasn't to gain a free dialogue of scientific information and all this stuff,
as is the common myth. So what they did is they implemented something that we know today is called the peer review system. And we're you know, in the next... A couple of episodes, we're going to get more into these ideas. But in 2015, I published an article called Spies in Academic Clothing,
and I recommend everybody read that because it explains how, and in fact, I'll pull it up here in a second if I can get it to load quickly enough, but how they get that to...
You have an echo going on.
I'm not sure why. I don't have anything feeding through. I'm not sure what's causing it. But it's here on the Gnostic Media website, or Logos Media website now. I keep getting that confused. But I recommend people reading this because it shows how exactly academic cells are created so that they control the whole dialogue. So I'm going to read a quote here by Carol Quigley, who is President Bill Clinton's professor at Georgetown University. He says, by the interaction of various branches of one another under the pretense that each branch was an autonomous power, the influence of each branch was an autonomous power, and the influence of each branch was increased through a process of mutual reinforcement. The unanimity among the various branches was believed by the outside world to be the result of the influence of a single truth, while in reality, it was the result of the existence of a single group. Thus, a statesman, a member of the group, announces a policy about the same time the Royal Institute of International Affairs publishes a study on the subject, and an Oxford Don, a fellow of All Souls and a member of the group, also publishes a volume on the subject, probably through a publishing house like G. Bell & Sons or Faber & Faber, allied to the group. The statesman's policy is subjected to critical analysis and final approval in a leader in the Times, while two books are reviewed in a single review in the Times Literary Supplement. Both the leader and the review are anonymous, but are written by the members of the group. And finally, at about the same time, an anonymous article in the Roundtable strongly advocates the same policy. The cumulative effect of such tactics is this: even if each tactical move influences only a small number of important people, is bound to be great. So we can see that it had nothing to do with creating an open dialogue and, you know, and whatnot. It was just they were creating a new religion and, you know, just a total control of the information. So, you know, we have to realize how these things are perpetuated onto the public. Go ahead, Holly.
I just wanted to mention that if you think about spies and propagandists and people like Martin Luther, like these big names. So we mentioned bards. That's one way that the information could come out, through repetition and a poetic matter to the masses. And then as a printing press came into popularity across Europe and became more easily accessible, it was still in the hands of the elite, you could say. But then the idea of pamphleteering became very popular. And so, as we've discussed in our other videos, all of these individuals were also just so happen to be pamphleteers. And that's how you could put forward the same agenda. You could create the propaganda for the masses. And, you know, that's how supposedly how the 95 thesis and Lutheranism spread across Europe. The Protestant Reformation used the printing press to make that accessible to the masses. And then, as we've talked about before and other people mentioned, the Royal Society was able to use pamphleteering, and that came into the United States. And then, you know, not to get too far into the future, but then, you know, that's how the Revolutionary War started up against the English throne and the Hellfire Club and everything like that. If you see, it's all that comes back to pamphleteering. So I just wanted to tie that into your talk about spies and academic clothing and using that technology to promote an agenda.
And in fact, the Spies in Academic Clothing article is, when Holly read it, was what made her realize Salem was the same thing. And then that was what brought us together to start working on this whole project. Now, in 2012, I published an article exposing Gordon Wasson, the founder of ethnomycology and the so-called discoverer of magic mushrooms, who is a CIA agent in charge of MKUltra subproject 58. He, I think I found this at Stanford, but so he's in a conversation with Bertram Wolf on October 8, 1970. Dear Mr. Wasson, I was greatly interested in your article in the New York Times on the sacred mushroom. I marked your note of sadness near the end, which I wish to tell you that you have nothing to reproach yourself for. Knowledge will out. If one man doesn't spread it, another will. The hippies, peddlers, dogberries will end, for nature abhors a vacuum. You may have hastened it a little by publishing in Life magazine rather than in a magazine of anthropologists, but the process was inevitable. And then Wasson replies on October 13, 1970, Dear Mr. Wolf, do you remember your last letter to me? I was asking you where Tolstoy had said the printing press was a mighty engine for disseminating ignorance. This Mazatec affair is a case in point. So again, we can see, you know, they're using the printing press, they're using peer review, they're using Harvard to control the dialogue. Of course, Harvard is promoting all of this liberal stuff. You know, Harvard came out of the Mayflower Charter, the whole thing with the Puritans and all, that's where Harvard came out of. So Harvard is the arm of the Puritans still today, and Harvard is still actively to this day selling this same agenda. I'm not sure what I missed.
Scientism, and you know, if you think about all the famous scientists and academics that we see today, all the public intellectuals, if you will, they're all tying back to Harvard. And I just want to say, Al said that he said,
yeah, I just saw that. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. And if anybody wants to send Holly money directly to, please do. Holly.Seeliger@gmail.com. They can PayPal her directly. She's got her own Patreon and stuff too for her channel. So we appreciate everybody supporting, you know, both of us. We still haven't moved everything together under one roof. So that's going to take a couple more months and whatnot to get that done. So maybe a few months, God forbid. But anyway, so let's see. So we have this whole control system where they've created a network. And then interestingly, and this is skipping forward, and we're going to start a part two, and we're going to go into more depth on a lot of this stuff in the next installment of this series. But oh geez, now what was Amit just interrupted me. Sorry folks, I just totally lost my train of thought there. Bummer. It was a good one too. You want to take over for a second there?
I think that's a pretty good description tonight of the intro to the Royal Society. We're at about an hour, and yes, that's my parrot in the background. So,
Bill Nye.
Goodness, even Jordan Peterson, didn't he work for? Wasn't he a fellow at Harvard at one point, or worked at Harvard?
Yeah, he worked at Harvard. You know, you have, oh boy, we can go into lots of people that worked at Harvard, the Royal Society and all of that. But Harvard has really, in my opinion anyway, become a strong arm for forcing the scientism and using the peer review system to control the dialogue, not to get honest information out there, But yes, thanks, Al. Thanks, everybody, for your support and donations tonight. Really appreciate it. I haven't had the window up to check everything out over there, so we really appreciate it. Oh, yeah, so the parrot is misbehaving right now.
Parrot says thanks for all the donations and sign up on Patreon, but she doesn't talk yet, no.
Yeah, if you can turn that down a little bit, please, just for a minute. So anyway, we are going to wrap it up here. It's 1 hour tonight, and next week we will have, we'll pick up from and go into more detail, picking up from about 1666 or so, and we'll move forward. Thank you, Sammy Sam, for the $4.99 donation, and we will get out more information soon. So thank you, everyone, for your participation tonight, and we'll see you all soon.